Our subject this morning is the Day of Judgment. We'll try at times to be thorough. Our Christian friends, the various denominations and non-denominations, have various opinions as to exactly what the Day of Judgment is to be. A lot of them think that it's going to be about 24 hours long. But let's stop and think, see the degree to which that's practical. And science is that which can be tested by the scientific method. You predict, you test, you observe, and you compare with your prediction. So let's give it the test now. If the judgment day is to be 24 hours long, then let's divide the number of seconds in one day by the total population that has ever lived. And let's be generous and say only 30 billion people have ever lived. It could be 40, possibly 60. That's all within a factor of two, certainly, because we already have 7 billion alive today. Now, if we divide 86,400 seconds by 30 billion, we find each person will have 2.88 microseconds, millionths of a second, during that judgment day. Well, that's not enough time to utter even a single syllable. So there's a problem there. Well, the church is going to join with God and Christ, during the millennium anyway, with Christ for the judging of the world. So let's multiply that very too small time by 144,000, and we still find that it's less than half a second per person. Not likely that a person's entire history is going to be broadcast during that period of time and then sentence pronounced. Now, let's consider another possibility. Suppose that the day would be 1,000 years long. Well, compared to 2.88 microseconds, let's round it off, 3 microseconds, it would still be only about 1 second per person. But if the job were allotted among the 144,000, each person would have about 2 days, or 42 hours more exactly. Even at that, it would appear there would be plenty of work also for a great multitude of assistants. Now, often, a biblical day is much longer than 24 hours. There was the day of the trial in the wilderness in Moses' time. How long was that? 40 years, that's right. That's in Hebrews 3, 8, and 9. And then there's a day of salvation. How long is that? That's right, it's about 2,000 years. Yet few would say the day of salvation is 24 hours long, would they? That would put everybody else out. So, but we find that if it's 1,000 years long, then, if 40 years in the trial in the wilderness that day, and a day of salvation is 2,000 years long, and then literally now that is a day of salvation, both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. And why? That's because there's another day of salvation too, isn't there? And that day is to be 1,000 years long. And then there's the Genesis chapter 1 days. How long are the days of earth creation? Well, they're thousands or even millions of years long. So it should come as no surprise if the day of judgment is around 1,000 years long. Now, there are two different Greek words, often each translated judgment. In Greek, it's krisis and krima. In English, it's crisis and crime. That's from the same stem we get our words, crisis. What's a crisis? Well, a crisis is like somebody is maybe dying, and the fever builds up to 108 degrees. It's going to go one way or the other. Or a fellow at work said he was an alcoholic. And he says, I will never be an ex-alcoholic. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And he says, as an alcoholic, I was drinking, and I got down to the bottom, and I knew there were only two things that could happen. Either I quit and get better, or I don't quit and I die. He says that was his crisis. On the other hand, the word crime we associate with conviction, sentencing, punishment. Now, the expression day of judgment is used seven times, but it is used only from the Greek word crisis. So the day of judgment is a judgment that can go either way, positive or negative. The outcome of the day of judgment is to be decided. Thus, it is not the day of condemnation, but the day of judgment. Now, multitudes are to come out of their graves, their tombs, during the day of judgment. We read that in John 5. That's verses 28 and 29. Marvel not at this, for the hour cometh in which all that are in their in the tombs shall hear his voice and shall come forth, they that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of, is it condemnation? No, the resurrection of judgment. And also, there are two different Greek words commonly translated grave or tomb. Now, the New World Translation, the 1961 edition, calls it memorial tombs. That's for each of the two common words. The words are, this you can go ahead and forget, but I'll say it anyway. Mnema and mnemion, and they derive from another Greek word, mnia, meaning memory. So it appears that the New World Translation here is technically correct. And that is in contrast to the Gehenna of fire. Again, we have three different Greek words that are commonly translated hell, in the King James, for example. But there are three different Greek words with three different meanings. We won't bother with Tartarus. That has to do with the fallen angels. But we have both Hades and Gehenna. Hades is not the lake of fire, but Gehenna is the lake of fire. It was the garbage dump on the southwest side of Jerusalem down in the valley. It was called the Valley of Hinnom. Or Ge, like Geo, meaning earth, the earth or the land of Hinnom. And so we have the Gehenna of fire in Matthew 5:22, 18:9, 25:41, for example. Or we have the lake of fire that John speaks of in Revelation chapter 20, verses 14 and 15. I suppose We might wonder, why use two different words? Well, maybe it's because in Revelation 20, Hades, death and Hades, are thrown into the lake of fire. So death and Hades are finished when the lake of fire keeps going on. Nothing is said there about torture, that as far as I can recall. Now, there is a resurrection for all from the, quote, memorial tombs, but there is no resurrection from the Gehenna of fire. Gehenna. That's mentioned 12 times in the Greek New Testament, 10 times as a warning to the church in the Gospel age, and twice to the Pharisees for persecuting the godly. Interesting that never it's spoken to the Sadducees, who never saw anything beyond the first death, the Adamic death. So a second death wouldn't mean anything to them if they didn't see anything beyond the first death in the first place. 1 Corinthians 3, 10 to the 7, verses 10 to 17 presents three possible outcomes for the consecrated in the gospel age. Quote, a reward, unquote, the divine nature, those falling short, lose the high reward, but yet are saved. The great multitude, that's the second possibility. Or third, the destruction, which I deem to be the second death, or Gehenna, for those who destroy self or the faithful church. This last, in second death, no further existence, I deem alone they will not be resurrected in the day of judgment, but everybody else will. For the whole rest of the church and the world, the hour cometh in which all that are in their tombs, memorial tombs technically, shall hear his voice and shall come forth, they that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have practiced evil unto the resurrection of judgment, is right. Now consider Revelation chapter 20, verses 1 through 15. We may get back to that a little later as well. In that, it says that that would be the church, they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. And the dead were judged. There's that word crisis, not crime. And the dead were judged out of the things that were written in the books according to their works. If we turn to Revelation chapter 22, we'll see that people will be judged according as their works are at that time. Or the King James says, puts it in the future, according as their works shall be. Romans 8, verses 19 through 22. The creation itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the liberty of the glory of the children of God. So the creation itself has something to look forward to, whether they know it or they don't know it. But the resurrection will be a real big convincer. In Ezekiel 18, for 20 to 24, if the wicked turn from all his sins, he shall surely live. He shall not die. Now, there's no need to restrict that to the gospel age, is there? Not at all. If the wicked turn from all his sins, he shall surely live. He shall not die. we sort of might get a suggestion that that's not talking about the present time, because there is none of us who can consistently turn from all his sins. We can sure try, we should try, and we should be mostly successful. But all his sins? That will be possible in the 1,000-year kingdom of Christ. In Isaiah 35, maybe just verses 5 to 10, in that we read, "The way of holiness, the unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for them." Now, how is that possible that the unclean, it's going to be for them, and yet they will not pass over it? What good is a highway if you can't pass over it? Well, let's stop and think now. The unclean person can start on the road, but if he cleans himself up in traversing that road, he'll wind up clean at the end. Therefore, that highway of holiness is to take the unclean and make them holy. That's why it's called the highway of holiness. We might consider Revelation 20 again, where they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. The dead were judged out of the things that were written in the books according to their works. Judged. Not condemned, but judged. Isaiah 65, 17 to 25, extract from that. "They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, saith Jehovah." That time will come. We certainly haven't seen it yet in the age before the flood or in the ages since the flood. So it will come in the 1,000-year kingdom. 1 Chronicles 16, 31 to 34. "Sing for joy before Jehovah, for he cometh to judge the earth." Let's keep this in mind. We are to rejoice because he cometh to judge the earth. This judgment is a good thing. Sure, there will be some difficult times, like at the beginning. But nevertheless, we should sing for joy because Jehovah cometh to judge the earth, the righteous judge. So the day of judgment was something to be looked forward to, even if its introduction is not pleasant. It is to restore the vast majority to perfection. So let's rejoice. Now we'll go through a number of scriptures to see what it has to say about the day of judgment, the day of wrath, the day of vengeance, the day of Jehovah, or the day of the Lord. We'll start with Matthew 10:15, and there we learn that it will be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment. So there will be degrees of tolerability in the day of judgment, even for those that have done particularly wickedly, so much so that they have been used as an example from that day until now. Matthew 11:20-24. "It will be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon," and then Sodom, emphasizing the same thing, the degrees of tolerability in the day of judgment. And I think we've all known people for whom it seems like when they're resurrected, it will be extremely tolerable. Of every idle, as this is now in Matthew 12, 24, also 35 and 6. Of every idle word, they shall give account. And that hasn't always been true in this age, has it? Oh, I know some of the stuff, well, you know, coming out of Hollywood lately. But nevertheless, for the most part, a lot has been hidden until this age. But of every idle word, they shall give account in the day of judgment. 2 Peter 2, 1-3 and verse 9. The Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly in the day of judgment. So the godly are to be delivered in the day of judgment. We think that would refer particularly to the church. The church is judged during the gospel age. But even as the kingdom is in preparation in the present time, the Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly even in this last day of the 7 days of the gospel age. Again, 2 Peter 3, verses 7 through 10. Here it tells us, one day is with the Lord as a thousand years. Now, I'm not principally interested in nailing down for everyone's satisfaction whether the year 2874 is to be the year when Satan is loosed, or instead if that's the year Satan is to be destroyed, or if that's long before Satan is loosed. But it does say the day of the Lord is as a thousand years. Maybe that's not quite the same as saying they lived and reigned with Christ a thousand years. But it does associate the kingdom of Christ and the day of judgment with a period of time that is on the order of a thousand years. Others can decide whether it is precisely a thousand years or a little longer. 1 John 4:17. Love is made perfect that we may have boldness before the throne of God in the day of judgment. Now we'll consider another expression, day of wrath. And here we have seven more scriptures where that expression is used. In Job 20:28, it tells us, the wicked's goods shall flow away. Okay, one of the expressions then, the prosperity of the wicked is destroyed or flows away during the day of wrath. It's pretty hard to stop things that are in a strong flowing stream. I guess our friends in Houston know about that, those in Puerto Rico, and often enough those in Florida. Job 21:30. The evil man is led forth to the day of wrath. Psalm 110, verses 1 and 5. The Lord will strike through kings in the day of his wrath. Proverbs 11:4. Riches profit not in the day of wrath. An awful lot of people seem to be willing to take a risk at that. Zephaniah 1:15-18. It's called a day of clouds and thick darkness, day of the trumpet. So it will not be a day of brightness. And do we see things going darker in our own age? I can remember when I was growing up, the Soviets had their newspaper called Pravda. It was anything but Pravda, which means truth. But the manufactured news was there. And here we have the media today. We have in this country and in Canada and in Europe, we have the media corresponding to the Soviet idea of Pravda. It's a day of darkness. A day of clouds and thick darkness. How much can you see in the clouds? Like when the clouds come down to the ground and you have maybe a class 3 marine fog, what do you see? Romans 2, verses 1 through 5. The hard heart treasurest up for thyself wrath in the day of wrath. Revelation 6, 17. The great day is come, and who is able to stand? No one is going to be able to take all his riches through the day of wrath, right into the kingdom, and enjoy them as king over all. There will be a new king, the Prince of Peace. And those are the seven scriptures on the day of wrath. And then there are seven more on another expression, the day of vengeance. It seems it's a little difference in meaning, but maybe not a lot. Proverbs 6:34, it's the rage of man that will not spare in the day of vengeance. In Isaiah 34:8, the day of vengeance, there's a day of vengeance, but a year of recompense for the cause of Zion. A day is a lot shorter than a year, isn't it? Aren't we glad that the day of vengeance is a lot shorter than the, quote, year, unquote, that follows the thousand-year kingdom? Isaiah 61, first two verses. Proclaim the year of Jehovah's favor, the day of vengeance. The year of Jehovah's favor is to be compared with a day of vengeance. 2,000 years of the gospel age versus just our short period of maybe 150, 160 years, whatever, 170 years. Isaiah 63:1-4. It's the day of vengeance, but the year of my redeemed is come. Again, we see the difference between a shorter day of vengeance and a much longer year of redemption. Jeremiah 46:3-12. It's that he may avenge him of his adversaries. And then there's advice for you and me in Jeremiah 51:5-6 here. Flee out of the midst of Babylon. Flee out of the midst of Babylon. Well, if we can identify what Babylon is, then we are to leave it. We are to hear the call, come out of Babylon, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. Flee out of the midst of Babylon. So, okay, we've got to ask the question then, what is Babylon? Is it just the Church of Rome and just the Church of Rome? Is it the Church of Rome and the Eastern Orthodox? By the way, Rome claims to be built on seven hills. Does that sound like one of the Revelation scriptures? But Constantinople calls itself New Rome. It was built by Constantine and made a new capital There's a mystery as to why he did that. But they also claim to be a city built on seven hills. So it's Babylon, Rome, plus Constantinople, and the ones that they rule. Or is Babylon the Catholic churches plus the Protestant churches, especially those that have had a church-state relationship? Or what is Babylon? Is it everybody but us? I think there's something a little narrow-minded about that. Because a Roman Catholic who's living what he believes is better than a Bible student who doesn't. But the purpose for coming out of Babylon, being called out of Babylon, is so that ye be not partakers of her sins. If we can identify the sins of Babylon, like are given in Jeremiah 50 and 51 and other places, then our heart motivation should be that we be not partakers of the sins that we come out. And, of course, there's the additional thought that if you stay in, you'll receive of her plagues. Now, in the Great Depression back in the 1930s, were the brethren affected by the Depression? The denominations certainly were. It was so greatly damaging that fundamentalism was relegated to only the fringes of Protestant thought. And that I quote from Lewis Cassell's, not from a Bible student. And at the same time, brethren in Phoenix were advertising public meetings and having 1,000 come out. Why not? They used it to advantage. Seats free and no collection. Who could afford to go anywhere else? And some of our denominational friends are fuming because some in their denominations are teaching that the Bible is not the reliable Word of God. Do we have that problem in our fellowship? No, at least these are some of the plagues that are not affecting us, and not affecting us because we have come out. And then in Luke 21, verses 20 to 24, I think we'll take a moment to read them. Luke 21. Maybe we'll read just the 22nd verse for sake of time. For these are days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. Okay, so we do need the context. But when ye see Jerusalem encompassed with armies, then know that her desolation is at hand. Then let them that are in Judea flee unto the mountains, and let them that are in the midst of her depart, and let not them that are in the country enter therein. For these are the day of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. And it goes on. So, to our brethren in the early church, who were in Jerusalem at the time when Vespasian's army was setting siege to the city in AD 68, they saw that, and then for some reason unknown to them at the moment, those armies were withdrawn. Turns out it was because the Caesar had died and Vespasian went to Rome to grab the crown for himself. But so in 69, you could leave the city, and the Christians did. And in 70, the army was reinstituted into the siege. And, of course, Jerusalem was taken, destroyed, and the temple was destroyed. 3 years later, the last Jewish fortress fell at Masada. So, that would be also typical of what's given in a different set of words in Matthew 24. where it's when you have seen the abomination of desolation, having stood in the holy place. Apply that to the first time in Jerusalem and it wouldn't work, because by the time you see it having stood in the holy place, it'd be too late to escape. Besides which, they didn't stand in the temple. They destroyed the temple instead. So that which happened to Jerusalem on a smaller scale is to happen at this end of the age as a part of the day of vengeance. Now we'll go through a little faster the expression the day of Jehovah or the day of the Lord. Isaiah 2:12, it's upon all that is proud and haughty. And that doesn't sound like a good part of the day of Jehovah, does it? Isaiah 13, verses 6 and 9. It's to desolate the land, to destroy the sinners. Doesn't say they won't be resurrected, but it does say they will be destroyed. Ezekiel 13, 5. Ye have not built up the wall to stand. Ezekiel 30, verse 3. It's a day of clouds, a time of the nations. That sounds a little similar to what is said of the day of wrath, doesn't it? So at least the day of wrath is a part of the day of Jehovah, whether a small part or not. Joel 1:15, it's as a destruction from the Almighty shall it come. Joel 2, verses 1 to 3. A day of darkness and gloominess and of clouds. Again, similar description as we saw in the day of wrath. So, to the world it may be the brain age. To us, it is the age of sorrow and insecurity and unhappiness. Joel 3, verses 14 to 17. Jehovah will be a refuge unto his people in the day of Jehovah. Amos 5, 18 to 20. It is darkness and not light, as if a man did flee from a lion and a bear met him. Sounds like maybe fleeing from the British lion and the Russian bear met him. Then he goes to his home and a serpent bites him. Obadiah 15 to 16. As thou hast done, it shall be done unto thee. Do we see a religious institution of the Dark Ages that is now suffering the things that it caused others to suffer under? Zephaniah 1, 7 through 10. Jehovah hath prepared a sacrifice. He hath consecrated his guests in the day of Jehovah. Zephaniah 1, 14. The mighty man crieth there bitterly. Good advice in Zephaniah 2, verses 2 and 3. Seek meekness. It may be ye will be hid in the day of Jehovah. Zechariah 14, 1 to 3. I will gather all nations against Jerusalem. Do we worry about what's going to happen in Jerusalem? No, we worry about what will happen to all nations. Malachi 4, 5. I will send you Elijah the prophet before the day of Jehovah. And we understand that to represent the church. That's why when Elijah was taken up in the whirlwind unto heaven, it says, it's a picture of the church and its heavenly destiny. Maybe not quite as close in Lamentations 2:22, none remained in the day of Jehovah's anger. There's one that could be suitable for the day of Jehovah or the day of anger or wrath. In the New Testament, Paul recommends to deliver to Satan, that the spirit may be saved in the day of the Lord. We understand that would apply to the great multitude. 2 Corinthians 1:14. We are your glorying, even as ye are ours also. Oh, on that previous scripture, I don't think it's saying that everybody who will become of the great multitude should be delivered unto Satan. Only if the sin is gross and not repented of. Because we'll recall Paul in 2 Corinthians says, okay, such is enough, that punishment that's been exacted by many. So now that he's repented, welcome him back. 1 Thessalonians 5:2, the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. Does a thief come with a trumpet? No, pretty sneaky. And most of the people won't be aware of it. Are the people of the world aware of what's going on today? Do the majority even understand the return of Israel and what it portends? Some do. I might just mention that one of the things that we've been observing is the wall, the barrier between Jews and Christians is being slowly eroded and broken down. You think that's a preparation for the kingdom of Christ? And Jews are beginning to see that the only allies they have in this world are found among Christians. Finally, 2 Peter 3:10, the day of the Lord will have come as a thief. The same thought. So, conclusions may be made as to the meaning of these 4 days. The day of judgment is to be around 1,000 years long. The present heavens and earth, spiritual and civil orders, are destroyed early in this day. Afterwards, Sodom and Gomorrah, Tyre and Sidon, evidently are to be resurrected, and they will experience a degree of tolerability. Ultimately, there will be the destruction of those who are, or at least remain, ungodly. The day of wrath, that's separate, the day of wrath kills many people and brings extensive destruction. Truth is obscured, power and wealth do not avail. This day apparently coincides with the 7th trumpet, or the last trumpet. It evidently is the early phase of the day of judgment. Now then, a day of vengeance. There was a day of vengeance against Jerusalem near the beginning of the Gospel Age, Luke 21. Most of the Gospel Age, the year of Jehovah's favor, is followed by a shorter day of vengeance. But the day of vengeance is followed by a longer period of time, the year of my redeemed, the kingdom of Christ. During this day of vengeance, faithful Christians are called, come out of Babylon. The day of vengeance seems identical to the day of wrath, but the day of vengeance emphasizes that the other is in retribution for the great sins of this world. And finally, the day of the Lord is a dark day, at least at the beginning, and it brings destruction, as discussed under the day of wrath and the day of vengeance. It will have come as a thief in the night, and that is the literal. Rotherham gives it that way. it will have come as a thief in the night. So evidently it spans some period of time. All nations will gather against Jerusalem, but ultimately it will be to their own destruction. Then, living waters will go out thence to the whole world. Zechariah 14:8. The day of the Lord, the day of Jehovah, spans the day of judgment, and possibly a little more. Now, if we are interested in a more detailed description of the day of judgment, that would be in Revelation chapter 20. But that will be for another time. So, we will conclude now with hymn number 72.